So am I still waiting? Waiting a long time.
Waiting for tonight.
So, take a look.
It's the Christmas edition of Review Away. Merry Christmas, everyone. It's John Pollock along with Wei Ting. And Wei, how was your Christmas this year?
I don't really celebrate Christmas, John.
There was no exchanging of any gifts?
Not
no family
really.
Events?
I think I went out for lunch with my parents, but, you know, that was unusual. We do that every week.
I spent Christmas, I started it on Christmas Eve, and then Christmas Day I finished watching Scarface.
Scarface, really?
Starring Al Pacino. I had never seen this movie, and I was home on Christmas Eve, and I decided to pop in Scarface, and this movie was fantastic.
It's pretty awesome. And,
it's pretty violent, a lot of snow.
A lot of snow, very appropriate for
it
Christmas.
It is a holiday classic. So that's how I spent Christmas.
What did you get? Any presents?
Well, Wei, I got an iPod for Christmas.
Whoa,
I already have an iPod, but mine is broken. So I'm a little pissed off.
Hold on. What do you mean broken? Because I remember at least maybe 4 years ago, you broke your last iPod.
Yeah, I did break my original iPod.
I'm still,
Mini.
For the record, I'm still on my iPod from 5 years ago.
That's amazing because most they say a year and a half is the lifespan of an iPod.
Mm,
but I've had mine since March of 2006. And then about 2 months ago, I dropped my iPod. And there's now this black black on the screen that covers the battery life of it, and now it's gotten even worse. I could deal with that. It's just like I always charge it every night, so I make sure the battery never dies because I can't see when it's going to expire. But now my iPod stops every 10 minutes, and I have to reset it in order for it to start up again. But you know when you reset an iPod, that like kills the battery. Like when you hit when you hit reset, it just destroys your battery.
So that means you can never get through an entire
No,
yes
it'll
song.
Just stop. I'll be in the car and have it on, or I'm just, you know, have it on my headphones, and it'll just stop. And I can't even enjoy the music because all I'm thinking about is when is this going to stop next?
You can enjoy 10 minutes of it. You can listen to 10 minutes at a time.
It's
but
just
anyway,
not enough.
How do you like your new iPod?
Well, I haven't been able to really use it, Wei, because these Apple fuckers have designed their iPods in such a way that I cannot take the music off my old iPod to move it into my library and onto my new iPod.
Well, of course, it prevents piracy.
No, but listen here. For my music, I have purchased the CD.
Yeah.
And then I've put that CD onto my iPod. When I buy the CD, I obtain the digital rights.
I totally
to that
understand,
song.
But you bought that CD and you put it on your computer first before you put it onto your iPod. Why can't you just plug your new iPod into your computer?
I can do that, but you see, I can't take those songs. They're all now MP4 files, and I can't put them into my library and store them in my library so that when I put my new iPod in, I can transfer that music.
What? No, okay, you have your CDs, and then you put them in your computer. They're on your computer's library, correct?
No, I haven't saved them on my computer's library. I have to re-upload all of them now.
Well, then how... So after...
Most of my songs... Okay, I'll reveal this now. 85% of my songs have been ripped from the internet, and therefore they are not saved on my computer. That's a lot of space, 1,200 songs. I'm not going to keep those on my hard drive, and I don't buy stuff off of iTunes, so I don't have an iTunes music library, so I'm really fucked here. However, now I know a lot of people are saying, well, good on Apple, it prevents piracy. No, fuckers, because Apple has designed a software that can combat this and take your music off your iPod and put it onto your computer.
Really? What is it called?
I don't know what it's called, but if it's a dollar, I'm not paying for it. I'm not going to support Apple's invention of how to fuck you.
I am a devout Apple follower. I'm using a MacBook right now,
yes,
John.
PC.
So I would know this, but I don't think they do have that software.
All I know is it's going to take me hours and hours and hours to get this music onto my iPod.
You should have never deleted your MP3s in the first place. You should have bought an external hard drive. They go for maybe
$50. Hard drive. I could have saved them, I guess.
Well, then do not blame Steve Jobs. Blame yourself.
I'm not slowing down my computer with 1,200 songs. You know how many megabytes that is, Wei?
I know, it's a lot of megabytes.
That's gigs of music that I don't have time for. That's like I have like 4 gigs of music on my iPod right now. I'm going to store all that on a computer. Nah, not necessary.
I have like 60 gigs.
Well, that's great. Let's get on to this review, Wei, because a lot of people have fast-forwarded to this point anyway. It's December to Dismember, December the 3rd of 2006.
Yes.
Taking place... from Augusta, Georgia, Wei, at the James Brown Arena.
Mm-hmm.
And this was an event so bad that 3 weeks later, James Brown died.
Oh.
He died December 25th, 2006, way. So, let's quickly remember James Brown.
One, two, three, four. Get up.
Get on up.
Get up.
Get on up.
Stay on the scene.
Get on up.
Like a sex machine.
Get on up.
Get up.
Get on up.
Get up.
Get on up.
Stay on the scene.
Get on up.
Like a sex machine.
Get on up.
Get up.
Get on up.
Stay on the scene.
Get on up.
Like a sex machine.
So that's where the event took place, the James Brown Arena. ECW's December to Dismember. Going into this pay-per-view, way, I know you're kind of sporadic with your viewing of WWE television. There were two matches that they promoted going into this show, and that was the main event Elimination Chamber match, where Big Show was defending the ECW title, and the tag match, which would open the card, Eminem against the Hardys. Those are the only matches they promoted for this $40 pay-per-view.
Yes. If I remember correctly, this was the week right after, what was the pay-per-view right before this?
This was right before Armageddon. Because during the show, Michael Cole was promoting that. Coming up next week was another WWE pay-per-view.
Was there a pay-per-view right before this one?
This would have been coming off the Survivor Series, which I think they showed something on the Survivor Series. I think it was 2 weeks before or something like that. So they had the Survivor Series, this, and then the following weekend was Armageddon.
My point is, how much buildup was there on Raw and SmackDown for this pay-per-view?
2 weeks worth.
Excellent.
And I don't even know how much time they spent on Raw and SmackDown promoting this show because it was all ECW guys. So let's get into this, way. Our announcers for the night, Joey Styles and Taz, both no longer on air for the WWE. Taz gone to TNA, and Joey Styles is now a webmaster for WWE.com. We start with Eminem against the Hardys. Melina came out. This was a very non-PG entrance for Melina, where she did the splits with a very short skirt on.
This is a PG-rated show. This is ECW.
Yes.
This is hardcore.
Yep. I noted here Matt Hardy looked about 10 years younger, and this was only 3 years ago. He's aged a lot in the last 3 years.
Mm.
I'm just going to, for these matches, I'm now just down to observations.
Okay.
I don't know how much people really care about move by move of what happened in these. And
if
it's not
care.
Entertaining, I don't care.
Yeah, I don't care. I mean, I think for print, it works. When you read reviews of wrestling, it works. But for talking, you don't care about each move.
Yeah.
You're not going to go back and go,
wow. The basic story of the match is what people want.
Well,
so,
what is the basic story
here
of this?
Here we go. Melina screams, really annoying. Matt counter vertical suplex. Random cut to a fan. Plancha by Johnny Nitro to Mercury and Matt Hardy. Big pop.
Yeah, fans chant, we want hardcore.
Yes. Then we saw Jeff dive to the outside. Taz made a note here that someone made a move or whatever, and he said, simple but good. Much like your commentary, Joey. It's a bit of a backhanded insult. Then I just wrote, too long. This match went 22 minutes away. Way too long. I have a theory, Way, that as this match was going on, they were finalizing the rest of the card for the rest of the night.
That could be very possible. I thought it was a good match, especially the finishing sequence, which I enjoyed. Taz sucked on commentary. At one point, aside from what you just mentioned, he said a move occurred, and then his words were, crash and burn a Rooney.
That's horrible. What was the finish here? They attempted a snapshot on Jeff.
A super snapshot.
A super snapshot off the top rope. And then they broke it up. Matt hit a double neck breaker onto Eminem.
Double twist of fate.
Yes. And then Jeff hit a swanton onto both men. They were in like a 69 position, and Jeff hit a swanton on them, and they got the win. This was 22 minutes. It was about 5 minutes too long.
Well, considering what was to follow, I think this was a match that perhaps...
What are you talking about? We got Rob Van Dam backstage, Way, with the words ECW.com exclusive while this was airing on pay-per-view.
Yeah.
What did ECW.com get exclusively here? This was not an exclusive. An exclusive means that is the only outlet for this interview. We've got it. No one else has this. No, this pay-per-view is airing this interview. They've got it. It's a WWE camera, and this maybe will be used on the internet. Probably not, though, because it'll be after the fact. He's building up a match that will be over by the time anyone will be going to the internet after this event.
You're a genius, John Pollock.
I'm just saying.
I did not make that observation.
I'll say this. When it comes to events, the more annoyed I get at events, the more nitpicky I get. And exclusive pissed me off. Don't use words like that when they're empty. So Matt Stryker then came out way, and what happened here?
I thought I know what you're going to say, but let me just be devil's advocate. I think he cut a great promo. He said, this match will be contested under extreme rules, an extreme enforcement of rules. And then he went on to list the rules. No pulling of hair, no top rope moves, no gouging of the eyes, and no foul language.
No foul language.
I enjoyed this. What did you think, John?
I thought this was very legit. This is all these rules are legitimate rules in the UFC.
No foul
language?
Under
the unified rules, you actually cannot use foul language.
Really?
In the octagon. If you go look at the unified rules, there's actually a note about using foul language in
the octagon, or
in a ring or cage.
But I swear I've seen somebody, unintentionally at least, shout fuck or cunt.
Yeah, I've heard it. Go watch one of Kurt Angle's matches. Or The Rock. Those two are foul-mouthed when they would have...
Okay. Well, I was thinking about the UFC.
When Kurt would have he'd go, tap you, motherfucker! And you could see it, right? And he'd be drooling and shit.
Or Scott Steiner.
Give me the fucking mic. So that leads us to Matt Stryker against Balls Mahoney in a Stryker's Rules match. And this is where I got annoyed at Taz, because it must have been 85 times that he used the phrase balls to the wall. Get it?
Yes.
What does that term mean? What way?
Balls to the wall. Well, it probably would have been coined for a ball sport, maybe dodgeball or some sort of
the interpretation is that it's action packed and it's no fear in the performer. He's going balls to the wall. Where is that adapted from? You know,
balls.
A game of squash.
Okay. Well, if it's referring to a person, it must be the person's balls
to a wall.
Maybe they're
that would hurt.
Of course. And maybe
why
that,
would you even do that? That's not extreme.
Because the action is so intense, you unintentionally hit your balls.
So
to
you
the wall.
See a guy using his balls like teabagging a wall, and your first thing is, man, that guy's got no fear.
If I saw that.
That guy's a fucking idiot.
If I saw some dude shove his balls into the wall at a hockey game or something, I'd be like, this is a pretty crazy hockey game. These guys are playing pretty hard. Anyway.
The story of the match was that Stryker worked over Mahoney's left shoulder, which worked in perfectly, where Mahoney made a comeback and executed a back body drop where... He specifically turns his body so that Stryker's weight goes on the left shoulder so he can do this back body drop. Like, that is intentionally just a fuck you to this whole injury angle. He moved his body so the left shoulder hoisted up Stryker after he sold it for like 1,000 minutes.
Well, he's that tough.
Then Mahoney hit some kind of a spine buster into a pin, and he got the win after selling for the whole match.
Yeah.
Was just annoying. It's like, why do you do that?
My whole thing was just, you know, this did not belong on pay-per-view.
No, and that would be the theme of the next six matches. CM Punk is shown backstage warming up, and then we cut to Sabu. The guy who was nicknamed the homicidal, suicidal, genocidal Sabu. The man that was billed as fearless. The man that once superglued his open wound shut from a barbed wire match. To continue on in the match, was laid out and unconscious. This was a destruction of the Sabu character in one shot. Heyman comes, looks pissed, and the officials are trying to get Sabu up, and they're yelling, Sabu, can you hear me? And the only thing louder was the chant of bullshit by the audience.
Mm-hmm. Right as they cut from
Sabu is out of the main event. And we should note, everyone, he did not fail a wellness test. He was not suspended. This was all a worked injury angle. On this show, where you've promoted nothing, one of the few things you did promote, you are now baiting and switching and taking Sabu out of your main event. We'll get to that later of who replaces him. I did not understand this.
I was going to ask you, was there some legitimate reason?
I never heard a story about this at the time, but there had to have been. I know there was a lot of heat on Sabu during his entire WWE run, but this was ridiculous. Taking him out of the main event, he's one of the few guys that this audience was likely there to see.
Yes, he's arguably the second most popular ECW original on this whole show.
Next up, we have Sylvester Turkai and Elijah Burke, who now competes in TNA as the Pope D'Angelo De Niro, taking on Little Guido and Tony Mameluke, which, on a side note, Wade, tonight I watched the season premiere.
Scarface.
No.
Oh, wait, that's
Jersey
Cuban.
Shore.
Never mind.
Have you seen the Jersey
Shore
yet?
No, I have not seen the Jersey Shore.
On MTV Canada?
And what is the side note?
I'm just saying, it reminded me because of Little Guido and Tony Mameluke.
Well, explain Jersey Shore.
Jersey Shore is a reality show on MTV where they take eight Italians, put them into a beach house, and it's all Guidos and Guidettes. And I'm not being rude here because that's how they refer to themselves in this show. They put them in there, and their job is that for the summer, they're in this beautiful beach house. They go out and party, but during the day, they have to work at a T-shirt shop selling shirts that say, "It's always dirty in Jersey," and shirts like that. Mm. So it's all these douchebags and these girls that are just Richmond Street, for lack of a better term, if you're in the Toronto area. It's just all D-bags. And it's
awesome.
A hilarious show. It's awesome. I watched the two-hour season premiere, and I've PVR'd two more shows of it. I can't wait to watch more of it.
That's
great
good.
Show.
That's good.
Little Guido, Tony Mameluke here. Sylvester Turkai was introduced as the MMA fight machine. He's actually fought in K-1 before, way.
Oh, he has.
He has. Yeah.
Yes, yes, yes. What do they call him?
He did the Bruiser Brody gimmick. Predator, yes. Yeah. The Predator, Sylvester Turkai. I noted Elijah Burke, very good on the stick. And he made a weird comparison, though, of himself to an animal in heat who's going to leave a mark.
Animal in heat who's going to leave a mark.
It sounded like he was going to dry hump Little Guido.
Mm.
And leave a stain on him. That's what I got from that. Right below this, I watched this show a week ago, and I just wrote here, Trinity Guido Mameluke, The Jersey Shore. And that's before I even watched the show. I just watched the show today.
It's like you predicted your
future. Yeah, it's like I foresaw what I would be talking about. Oh. This was great. Turkai destroyed both men. This was a squash match on a pay-per-view, folks. Yeah. Short offense for Guido and Mameluke. One near fall, Elijah experience on Mameluke for the win. And then afterwards, Turkai hits Guido with the muscle buster while there's chance of TNA from the crowd.
That's right. I did not even see that, actually. I fast-forwarded through all this.
You didn't miss anything. Sabu is then taken away in the ambulance. And that leads us to our next star-studded spectacular. On this $40 pay-per-view, Daivari versus Tommy Dreamer. Seriously, guys, this was on a pay-per-view. Oh, yes. The first thing I noted was that the Great Khali came out, and I was like, holy shit, we're going to see the Great Khali work now. But he was only in the corner of Daivari. Khali was ejected early on because he was getting involved in the match and attacking Dreamer. There was a sleeper hold applied by Daivari, which extended to the entire live crowd. We saw a hesitation dropkick by Dreamer while Daivari was in the Tree of Woe. Daivari countered with a DDT and then hooked the tights for the win. They beat Tommy Dreamer on this pay-per-view.
Yes, they beat.
Took away Sabu. You're not getting Sabu in the main event. We're going to job out Tommy Dreamer to Sean fucking Daivari. And then Khali came out and hit a tree slam on Dreamer on the steel entrance. And then my highlight of the show, and I rewound this to hear, was a fan at ringside who yelled, "This isn't extreme, it's entertainment." Just some random fan yelled that.
The fans, well, the whole thing about this pay-per-view was that these were ECW fans at a WWE pay-per-view. These were fans that were expecting another one-night stand.
This isn't extreme, it's entertainment. So then we're backstage with Paul Heyman, who informs Hardcore Holly that he's going to be replacing Sabu in the main event, and the booze. The best part about this, guys, is we didn't watch this on a WWE DVD. This was the VHS of when the pay-per-view aired, so there was no editing, no bullshit cut out. This was the raw presentation of December to Dismember, because I'm sure a lot of this stuff was taken out.
I would have actually liked to at least have one of us watch the DVD just so we could compare, see what they did take out.
They did send us, the WWE did send us DVDs of that, but I looked and I did not save any, so unfortunately.
No, that's fine. Yeah. I guess I wasn't going to go through and watch it again anyway.
Next up, oh my God, Kevin Thorne and Ariel against Mike Knox and Kelly Kelly. Ariel was wearing a thong that she frequently displayed for the camera.
Yeah,
it got was the heel, everyone.
It got the biggest pop of the entire night, Ariel's thong.
I thought this was an apt metaphor because the life had been sucked out of this entire audience by this point. They were dead, way. Just like vampires.
And we're pretty dead right now, too.
Yeah, this is a boring show. Not our show. This show's great. I'm talking about the pay-per-view.
This show is getting boring, though.
Yeah, a little bit. But we're going to be giving away free stuff soon, so stay tuned. You can fast forward this, too.
We only have two matches left.
Yeah, thankfully. All of the heels in this match, minus Kelly Kelly. There was one babyface in this whole match. Knox, they explain that Mike Knox wants to win this match because Kelly Kelly is showing a liking to CM Punk on TV.
Yeah, that makes sense.
No.
No, it doesn't?
How is that going to change anything? Kelly Kelly came out here, and she got on the microphone and wished CM Punk good luck in the main event.
But if Mike Knox started winning some matches, maybe she can earn Kelly Kelly's love again.
That's a bad idea. Ariel, she did the spot where she rubbed her ass, and that led to an elbow drop. Knox was on the apron, and Kelly tried to make the hot tag, but Knox left the ring. He got down to the floor and walked away, and this caused Kelly Kelly to cry. Ariel hit Kelly with a judo takedown, and then Sandman ran down and attacked everybody. This was after Ariel pinned Kelly, so the team of Kevin Thorne and Ariel got the victory. Sandman came out. I thought they were going to do an injury angle with Sandman, just to keep it fresh with all the original ECW members getting booked terribly.
Mm-hmm.
Then we had Michael Cole promote Armageddon next weekend, Way.
On a pay-per-view.
On pay-per-view. And then there was some random girl with Bobby Lashley interviewing Bobby Lashley. I didn't know who this woman was. And Lashley just announces, tonight, one man, one mission. He was going to win the ECW title.
And then another highlight pack.
I fast-forwarded.
And then another highlight pack of the Chamber.
Oh. They were killing time. Guys, this was an hour and 45 into the VHS. So this would have been 9:45 p.m. the night this pay-per-view aired, and the main event is getting set to start.
It was like 15 minutes of videos and a promo for Armageddon before we had the next match. I mean, just thank God for VHS.
Now, before this match started, Paul Heyman came out with security, got in the ring, and if ever there was a promo cut by a guy that basically revealed that he was leaving this company, this promo was it.
And right before I came out, I was standing in the back, and I realized to myself exactly what has been created. Exactly what, quite frankly, I created. Because I'll be honest with you, if you look at all the legendary things that have come forward, Hulkamania dies when Hulk Hogan dies. The Woos will die with Ric Flair. But long after my death, ECW will live on.
So Paul Heyman announces that no matter whatever happens to him, ECW will live forever, which as we go into 2010, the big story is that ECW will likely not be living forever, and Sci-Fi will be dropping the initials from that show.
What I noted from the promo was at one point he says the days of RVD, Sabu, and Sandman are over.
True.
The man to lead ECW into the future is the Big Show. And right as he says the Big Show, someone in the audience shouts, who's going to retire next year?
The 7-foot-tall, 500-pound Big Show!
Who's going to retire next year?
I famous.
Yeah. Good crowd.
Awesome. Gotta love fans and the way they were mic'd on this show. This match was just horrible.
The intros took forever for this Elimination Chamber.
Oh. Should I answer this?
Answer it. Who is it?
It's Jason Agnew. Hello?
Put him on speaker.
Hey, Jay, what's going on? Oh, okay, I'll come down and get you. Or Sasha will come get you. All right, bye. Not editing that out. Jason Agnew's here, everyone, because we're doing the law tonight. But this is Monday for most of you. All yes. of them had weapons, way. CM Punk had a chair. Test, the late Test, had a crowbar. Bobby Lashley had a table. They put him in a pod with a table.
Mm.
Big Show had a barbed wire bat. Yeah. Well, what can we say about
who
this
cares?
Match, Wade? Yeah.
All right. First, we had RVD versus Hardcore Holly.
Fantastic.
RVD jumps off the ropes and onto the fence, and then he hops off the fence, but lands gut first on the ropes. I thought that was a cool spot. There's a lot of brawling, and then Punk comes out, more hardcore spots, and there are some creative spots with the chairs and the cage and all that. Then Test comes out with the crowbar next. RVD is bloody, and Test eliminates CM Punk.
And if there was any life left in the crowd, it was gone after CM Punk was eliminated.
Well, it wasn't completely gone.
Oh, yeah, that's right. Then the next spot with Test and RVD.
Yeah. Well, first of all, Test pins Holly, and then the ref counts to two, but then he just, something happened where
Holly probably fucked it up.
He was meant to count three, and the crowd was just confused. Then Van Dam goes for a five-star above the chamber. Test knocks him down with a chair. Test dives off the chamber with an elbow drop onto RVD, and RVD is eliminated. The second man to be, or the third man to be eliminated from this match. The crowd completely deflates. They chant bullshit. The remaining competitors on this ECW pay-per-view for the ECW title are The Big Show, Lashley, and Test.
Horrible. Lashley breaks out of his pod. Test misses with the crowbar, and Lashley spears him and gets the win. Pins and eliminates Test, and this comes down then to Lashley and Big Show, correct?
With the barbed wire bat.
Yes, and a running spear by Lashley. He wins the ECW title, and this horrible pay-per-view is over. Anything else of note, Way? Bobby Lashley wins the title and then leaves the company a year later.
Yeah. My VCR saved this pay-per-view from being completely unwatchable. You know, for what it was, I thought the main event was pretty decent. The Hardys match I enjoyed, though neither were ECW teams.
There was no matches on this show that were like worst matches of the year. It was just boring.
It was a TV
squash format. It was a TV show.
It was a TV show.
It was a TV show that you paid $40 to see.
Yeah.
That's the best way you can say it.
Yeah. The two match thing, I think it's completely inexcusable. Even on the DVD box, I looked it up afterwards. Even on the DVD box, they only list the two matches.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Because, they would have had to get all the... That shows you right their way, that none of it was planned ahead of time, and nothing was finalized. So that's all that they could get out to the, you know, to the DVD distributor to put together.
I don't think this was the worst pay-per-view ever, but if you're...
No.
But if you're an ECW fan expecting an ECW show, you would definitely think
especially that. Coming off those one-night stand shows. And this was just a WWE production attempting to do ECW.
This was a WWE production trying to piss... On the all that piss up, they took out Dreamer with Sean Daivari. What was the other one? They took out RVD.
Sabu,
third guy. Sabu,
Dreamer.
Come on.
Sandman was the only one who got some heat.
It was intentional. Come on, it had to.
Oh, absolutely. I have no doubt about that. About a year after this pay per view, I interviewed Paul Heyman, and here's a little clip from that interview where we discussed this pay per view and all the headaches associated with this. Because after this pay per view, Paul Heyman was never seen on WWE TV again. He went home the next day and was never heard from again in WWE. Now, the last time we had you on the show, it was the Friday before the December to Dismember show. You were chatting with our co-host, Jason Agnew, and the interview ended with you telling Jason, I've got a meeting with Vince McMahon. Can you summarize what went on that week leading up to that pay-per-view, as well as the fallout, which ultimately ended with yourself and Vince McMahon realizing the two could not work together?
Yeah, that was a really bad meeting that I walked into, too. Man, that boy, you know, it's funny because I usually remember the interviews that I do because I tend to not do that many. And I don't even remember the interview. I know now that you mentioned it, but I didn't remember it until you did.
Well, it was really good, Paul. It was an excellent interview.
I must have been on autopilot because that was that week was just hell. You know, here's what happened. You can point fingers all you want, okay? From Vince McMahon's perspective, he bought the rights to ECW. It's his company. He can do anything that he wants with it. That's his judgment, his right, his privilege. End of the day, you can't take that away from him. And if he wants to take it in a certain direction, that's his prerogative. It's his company. He owns it. From my perspective, the manner in which you implement that, you know, can be civil and can be reasonable and can be rational. And I just felt that it wasn't. The basic problem between Paul Heyman and Vince McMahon boiled down to is that Vince McMahon is addicted to competition. And when I sat down with him, this is back in 97, back in 97, and we were talking, this was during when we did some appearances on Monday Night Raw to help promote our own pay-per-views.
Right.
And I remember that Vince was, we were in the Manhattan, this was when we did the Manhattan Center invasion, and Vince was using an electric razor to shave his beard, or his stubble, and he was grinding it into his face so brutally. It looked like the guy was trying to hurt himself. And he could tell that I was just laughing about it, and he looked at me and he says, my daughter, you know, who's Stephanie, he says, my daughter says I compete with my own beard. And that's Vince, you know. Everything with Vince is a competition. He lives for the competition. He thrives on it. He's addicted to it. He needs it in his life. So there was no competition for Vince. The only competition really was from UFC for the domestic pay-per-view buy, and if you really come down to it, there's nothing he can do to fight that fight. That's a fight that it's either the product's working and it moves forward and sells more pay-per-view, or the product's not working and it sells fewer pay-per-views. There's nothing Vince can do really to try to out-position UFC, at least not at this moment. So the nearest thing Vince had to competition was he had the ECW brand under his umbrella. He had the guy that is credited, rightly or wrongly, with the notoriety of the creative product called ECW under his employ. That's me, and he wanted to compete for it. Well, this is a predetermined finish here. This is like walking into the main event of WrestleMania and saying, "You wonder who's going to win." No, you don't wonder who's going to win. You know who's going to win because it's a predetermined finish. So when he owns the company and the person in charge of creative is under his employ, the predetermined finish is Vince's way is going to happen. So I would write out a show, and Vince would gleefully want to change it just so that in his heart he can say, I made a decision about ECW and overruled Paul Heyman. I competed with him and I won. Well, no shit, you won. It's your company, and I'm your employee. And it became a competitive environment for Vince, at least, over the product. And I was sitting there tapping from day one saying, hey, let's just make this the best product we can make it. And he just wanted to prove points that he could make the changes. So it became an unbearable personal situation. I had tried to resign. I mean, when I did that interview with Jason, I mean, if that was the Friday before the show, I had been trying to resign for the three weeks prior. And I'd, you know, given my resignation to Stephanie several times, and even once in front of the entire writing staff, just in the name of the product. I said, you know, this product is suffering because all we're doing is fighting over it. Let me go. you know, I'll get out of the way of the product. Maybe if someone else is sitting here, Vince will at least listen to them, because it's apparent to me that this has gotten real personal. He's competing with me over a product that he owns, so let me get out of the way. And then at least we all have happier lives. And Stephanie kept trying to mediate between me and Vince and try to make the peace. And that's to her credit. And that was funny because, you know, we had butted heads for so long, and here she was stepping in and trying to make the peace. So at the end of the day, it just became a matter of a personal clash between me and Vince that Vince couldn't get by, and I just didn't want to subject myself to it anymore, or subject the brand to it anymore, subject the legacy of the brand to it anymore. And it was obvious to me that it was just time to go. You know, it was just, why work in that environment? Why subject yourself to it? And why even just make more of an enemy out of Vince when, you know, I always liked Vince, and obviously, you know, we had come to an impasse, and it was just time to get the F out of there.
So that was Paul Heyman, everyone, discussing the dreadful ECW December to Dismember show from December of 2006. And I will give that way. I'm going to give it a 2 out of 10.
2 out of 10, all right. Well, with the VCR, I would give it 4 out of 10. If I had to watch it live, I'd probably give it a 2. If I paid $40 for it, I would give it 0.5 out of 10.
Thankfully, we were able to expense that pay-per-view, so we never had to pay for it, thankfully. We'll now get into our contest here, everyone, and we were asking people to go post on the wall Christmas gifts that you could give to the stars. And we're going to go through them really quickly here. I have not picked a winner, but you have, Wei. So I'm just going to pick one as it strikes me here. Should we go through all of these?
There are a lot of them.
There were a lot. Well, there are a lot from Mark Cardoso.
Yes.
He posted like 8,000. We'll go here quickly through some here. I'm only going to pick some really, really good ones. Okay, from Shai Avigan from Israel. He did actually email me about the pronunciation of his name. It's not Shai,
okay.
It's Shai. Since she's not going anywhere, I think the only logical way to kill her push, I'd have Michelle McCool get pregnant, and hopefully she'll get fat as a pig. And as a gift for the bastard child, I'll send her a candlestick, because she can't hold a candle to any of her fellow divas. Fire that Undertaker, screw her. Say amen to that.
These are actually funnier when you read them out loud.
Kaylin Baker, I'd give Jeff Hardy a clean urine sample. Adam Benson, I would give Triple H a nasty divorce from Stephanie, where he is caught in a Tiger Woods situation, and his status goes from top of the card to jobbing on Superstars. Some very angry people that listen to this show. I would give both Jack Swagger and The Miz about 4 inches in height and 30 pounds in muscle so they could be pushed the way they should be. More here. I would give MVP, this is from Mark Cardoso, I would give MVP a GPS system so he can find where his push went. That one's okay. I'd give Batista a torn bicep, Triple H a torn quad, Cena a torn pec, Mark Henry a torn patella. That would amount to giving us wrestling fans a very good Christmas. That's from Alex Stephanie. Ryan Allen Abbott, I would give Chuck Liddell a new jaw and Lacey Von Erich a poke in the whiskers.
What does that mean?
These fuckers are so dirty. What more do we have here? For Dixie Carter, I would give her the Death of WCW book and the How to Run a Wrestling Company and Not Let the Talent Swindle You for Dummies book from Mark Cardoso again. That's all that we're going to take from Mark Cardoso. Scott McCullough, I'd give Vince a front row ticket to the January 4th Impact just to see it. He's running a show that night, so I don't think Vince would be attending the January 4th Impact. And then we had some posts. Rob King, I'd give Michelle McCool a new boyfriend so she stops getting pushed merely because she's banging The Undertaker. Andy Black, I'd give Sid some clean underwear and a rabies shot for that squirrel bite. And Patrick McHugh, I'd give Fedor whatever Brittany Murphy had and watch him beat his ass down. Have a good Christmas, guys. I don't necessarily know what that means. And last one here, I'd give Joni Lauer a new vagina. The plastic surgeon told her it had a strict 15,000 limit. Medical science can only be asked to do so much. That's from Dale Perry. So thanks for everyone for your honesty and what you would give the stars of the WWE and wrestling alike. Wait, you did have a pick, so I'm going to let you pick the winner here.
Well, even though that the one you read from him wasn't too strong, I do have two very good ones from Patrick McHugh. I'd give both Mark Henry and Brian Knobs the push they deserve. A push off a fucking extremely large building onto a pile of medical waste. Another one from Patrick. I'd give Hogan a giant dildo so he can go fuck himself.
Those, I did have those written down here, and I should have read them. Those are very good ones. So Patrick McHugh is our winner. Oh, do you have another?
Nope, that's it.
That's it. So Patrick McHugh, congratulations. You are the winner of our contest. We will be in touch with you, and you will be getting something. Maybe if we find a...
Look what I got.
What is that?
This is a burnt copy of Santa with Muscles in Polish.
Perfect.
There you go, Patrick.
Patrick is going to get a Polish version of Santa with Muscles. That'll teach you to join.
Well, you'll get something else, too, but you'll get this with it.
All right, so that wraps up Review Away. Next week, we have got... Thank you to Justin Arthur, who has given us a copy online of the January 4th Monday Nitro featuring the infamous One Finger Push. From Hulk Hogan and Kevin Nash. We're going to review that next week. It's a three-hour edition of Nitro.
Oh, which, I thought this...
has
I thought
commercials
this...
in it, so that's fantastic.
Okay, that's good.
So we can fast-forward through a lot of that. That is what we'll be reviewing next week on the eve of the Monday Night War between the WWE and TNA Impact. So that's coming up next week. And music way. Is it my pick or your pick?
It's your pick.
All right. I'm going to go with... a song that has been in my head all week and has actually made its way onto my old iPod because I can't put new music on my new iPod. It's The Moments, Love on a Two-Way Street, that I got off Way's Facebook page.
Excellent.
It's a great song, and it's sampled in Jay-Z's Empire State of Mind.
On a lonely highway, love on a two-way street, and lost it on a